I'm Aaron Kleiber. Sean Collier is on vacation. He literally is on vacation. I am here with director, writer, friend Chris Preksta.
Hello, hello.
We're here this week reviewing, talking about one of the most anticipated films of the year, one of our most anticipated films, Sean and I. Chris, you? Sure.
Oh, of course.
It is Blade Runner
2049.
I forget the number. I always, I'm like, what
What's
year
funny
is it?
Is there's an, isn't there an N64 game like San Francisco Rush 2049?
Yeah, dude.
Like a racing game.
No, remember Cruisin'.
Cruisin'. Cruisin' 2049.
No, wasn't it that racing game in like Dave and Buster's?
Just put 2049 at the end of the thing. Legend of Zelda 2049.
Well, that's what we're talking about this week.
Paperboy 2049.
Yeah. Paperboy 2049.
He's on a hover bike.
On Neo Geo.
And he's a cyborg.
Yep, you can tell when I take over the podcast. Blade Runner 2049 this week on You Can't Handle the Truth. Keep that in. This is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, October 6th, 2017. I think that's, pretty sure. So, hey, we just got out of Blade Runner 2049.
Which is, what, 32 years in the future? 32 years.
Is it?
Will
32 years?
Alive? Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. But first, you know what? This is almost like a fun dual episode because last night we went and saw Blade Runner, the original. Well, the final cut.
The final cut. Is that now Blade Runner 2019?
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, is that what they're saying?
No, I just made it up.
I'm okay with
that. It takes place in 2 years from now.
Yeah,
let's be honest. It might look like that. It's possible.
I mean,
there might be towers of fire in Los Angeles.
What was it when
did
they do that? 1982?
1982.
I mean, sure. I mean, that's a long time.
Yeah.
That's 30 years, right?
Isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yes. As Chris knows, there's no spoilers.
Correct.
Which, Blade Runner 2049, that's tough. There's a lot of things we cannot talk about. I usually we try to reiterate that when Sean does. Sean's usually the quarterback. So this guy's this is going to be a mess. This is going to be a mess. Sean usually quarterbacks.
I didn't even see the movie. Clivers brought me in to talk about it. So
I was like, meet me at MacGuffin's. By the way, we're live from MacGuffin's per usual in the champagne room of MacGuffin's, surrounded by old black and white photos of
Clark Gable.
Modern. No, I think it's funny that there's black and white photos of modern actors and actresses.
That's on the walls. I'm looking at Clark Gable right here.
Oh, yeah, the big picture of Clark Gable in MacGuffin's champagne room.
I'm also seeing some water damage up on the ceiling. I mean,
we're dads. we own homes.
I'm like, I'll have that fixed before this podcast is over.
Sean doesn't see that stuff. Sean just calls his landlord. But last night we saw Blade Runner in the theater, the final cut, and I'm gonna. That's my version. I like the final cut. Is that?
Yeah. No.
Are you with that one?
I think it's great. Yeah.
I'm okay with no narration.
My brain has not done a good enough job of like remembering all the different versions. So I guess whatever version I'm currently watching is typically the one I'm enjoying. So
now you.
But final cut's great.
What? How many versions are the Richard Donner Superman?
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, Chris likes Superman a lot because he used to draw Superman in geometry class in like eighth grade.
Yeah.
There's
probably at least 7 copies of Lord of the Flies with a Superman drawn on the inside cover.
A flip book of Chris Preksta turning into Superman. You just flip through Catcher in the Rye, and you see 1996 Chris
Superman
Preksta
carrying me off into the clouds.
Yeah. But who's What does he say? What does she say?
You've got me. Who's got you?
Oh, you've got me. I forgot about that. Is that Jesus in the Bible? Is that part of the beat? The
that's footprints. That's part of footprints. You've got me. Who's got
it's
you?
It's part of footprints.
That's one of Superman catchphrases.
That's the end of the footprints. Yeah.
Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. When there was only one set of prints, I was carrying you.
I'm like laughing my ass off. Sean,
so Blade
if Sean's
Runner,
listening
Blade
right
Runner.
Now, we need to laugh more. No, I've known Chris for, oh my God, 20 years. So longer than that. No, the first Blade Runner, I always say, every time we
have
see
have we known each other, or are those memories implanted?
Guys, we're not even getting to Blade Runner 24. We're not getting to that yet. But every time we see a retro, I'm always really excited. Like I was just saying to some of our friends we saw, it's always really awesome to see an old movie on the big screen because mm-hmm. you just notice so many different things.
It's an entirely different experience.
I watched the original Blade Runner a couple months ago in a hotel room on my laptop.
That's the way Ridley Scott intended.
Chest. Yeah,
when he made the movie, he said, someday Funyuns. There will be small computers.
Oh, gosh. I know. And you know, I'm watching it again, and I haven't seen it probably in – man, I probably haven't seen that before then for a long time. And I thought, man, was it really this slow? Is it this boring?
It's slow.
Boring is a strong word. But, you know, I was watching it like 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
After doing 2 shows probably. Mm-hmm. So, but then watching in the theater, I'm like, this is – dude, the original Blade Runner is, I have to say, one of the best sci-fi movies ever made.
Of course.
It has to be.
It's largely because of atmosphere.
Oh.
It transports you to that world. I mean, you feel, yeah. I legitimately last night sitting through it again, I've seen it probably 2 or 3 times on the big screen, and every time you feel dirty. Like,
yeah.
You just feel like you're in these cruddy apartments. You always, it kind of feels like there's always, every scene there's water dripping from somewhere. There's just.
Isn't that, as a director, I mean, you just filmed a short film called Echo Torch
mm-hmm.
in some old locations. And can people watch Echo Torch?
Mm-hmm. At echotorch.com.
See?
Or just Google Echo Torch.
It's a cool kind of, what would you say?
I actually watched a lot of Blade Runner leading up to it. Blade Runner
really?
Was a massive inspiration for it. Absolutely.
What would you say Echo Torch is? Is it like a...
Sci-fi.
Sci-fi?
Yeah,
okay.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, you know. But like... When he creates those atmospheres, that's got to be a nightmare.
I know.
I've been on sets where it's like a school classroom, and that takes forever.
Yeah.
Dude, I can't imagine. I've never been on a complex set like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, dude, like, I mean, you got to, after you see it, you think, is it worth it? And, yeah.
It's on the screen, man. I mean, that movie, I think if it didn't have that atmosphere, I don't think the movie would be as a classic as it is. Because the story's not bad. The story's good. But it's very, very simple. It's very, very, very thin story.
Yeah.
Told very well. But that atmosphere and mood,
well, it's definitely
not match
I mean,
it.
It's definitely a movie you bring up when you say the atmosphere is a character.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely
You never really feel like you're on a set.
Right.
You know, it feels like this is a living, functional place. These people actually, you know, live in these terrible, terrible apartments. And
I know. Oh, crap. I forgot what I was going to say.
And I don't know that Blade Runner, I don't know that the first Blade Runner is the first example of this. So, this, you know, better film history buffs may know a better example of this. But it's one of the most stark examples of combining genres because it is futuristic, but it is also a throwback to noir films. It's an old.
Well, that's
the movie could have been in black and white. It's an old noir.
That's
I know Alphaville
most,
is another foreign example of another movie that was futuristic.
That's one
noir.
Of the, I honestly think that's one of the most fascinating things about it, and one of the most creative things about it is Ridley Scott kind of takes. I mean, it is a film noir story.
Yes,
I mean you literally can take that.
That could have been instead of Harrison Ford. That could have been Humphrey Bogart.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. The fact that he takes that. You know, film noir story, and, you know, you want to kind of get in his brain thinking like, okay, he probably grew up with that, probably loved it, probably always wanted to do a movie like that. I don't know. Maybe someone right now is like, I heard that in the commentary, and that's exactly what he said.
Yeah. Well, he was probably even if you look at Alien. Alien is also is another example of early stuff where he's combining genres. It's a trucker movie.
Yeah,
it's
dude.
Guy, it's people it's, on a ship.
It's like it. It's kind of like that 60s.
Yeah, it's like a it's
like it, a like a chain gang.
Yeah,
like a,
exactly. It's just like workers.
Like, yeah, like just, we gotta fight a monster in
the
woods.
And then suddenly there's
we're
an
lumberjacks.
Alien. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So that it, that combination of genres, you know, he was doing very early on.
Taking that into the future. Into sci-fi is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
And Rutger Hauer, by the way, is the perfect specimen. So still is, in my opinion.
He's a darn fine man in that movie.
Sean Young.
Terrifying. I just remember specifically when first saw that movie in high school. Roy terrified me. Especially the end scene, him going through the house and whatnot. It's just, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just phenomenal.
Oh, he's really scary. Sean Young, Finkel and Einhorn. Did you know that? Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite pieces of trivia that I was like, oh, you didn't know that she was in Ace Ventura. Well, anyway, enough about the original Blade Runner. So we got to see Blade Runner
2049.
I'll say it right off the bat. I'm pretty excited.
Mm-hmm.
I very much liked it.
It was...
We haven't said anything about that yet.
Very, very good movie.
It was very, very good.
Very good.
We can rate it, but we could go through it a little bit, you know.
How many would you give it? How many?
How many? We'll give you how many. We'll do after. How many synth bars?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is how do I keep forgetting how to say his name?
Denis Villeneuve. Villeneuve.
Villanova. That's a. That's not
Isn't
true.
That a basketball team or something?
Okay. Well, we're going to settle this once for all. Okay, guys? I'm going to get to it. This is
everybody loves a podcast where someone's looking something up on the phone.
You son of a bitch. Listen.
And to
this
get
is,
even
this
nerdier
is part of
than that.
Today we're going to learn how to pronounce the name Denis Villeneuve in French.
Denis
Villeneuve. Denis Villeneuve. Okay.
YouTubers trying to pronounce his name, especially YouTubers.
Who also did Arrival, which was phenomenal.
One more time.
Today we're going to learn how to pronounce the name Denis Villeneuve in French.
Denis Villeneuve.
Okay.
Villeneuve. Yeah. What did you just say?
He did Arrival and Sicario.
Oh, yeah.
Both of which were amazing. Arrival was probably my movie of the year last year. That was probably my number one.
That was my number one as well. Right now, I mean, he did do Prisoners. That was rough. That was rough to watch.
Oh, he did Prisoners.
He did Prisoners.
Was, I mean, I cannot tell you the last time I've been riveted, like just locked into a movie like I was with Prisoners.
Yeah.
I could not peel my eyeballs away from that screen.
Yeah, it was one of those things where
it's so hard to watch.
You're so involved and you're like, oh my God, please. Like you're so emotionally involved.
Wow.
And
why did I not put two and two together that was
yeah.
him? Yeah.
And then he did a movie called Enemy with Jake Gyllenhaal that was like a dude that sees his double. He's hunting out his double. But then Sicario was one of our favorite films, Sean and I. And then Arrival is one of my favorite films of the decade.
Yeah.
Right now, with Blade Runner 2049, you know you're afraid that Denis Villeneuve is. You mentioned it too, like he's gonna get some crappy studio film, and they're like, hey, can you do Aquaman 4?
That's what I was worried.
Right.
This was gonna be.
Yeah. Right?
When I saw the first trailers for Blade Runner 2049, I gotta admit, not that I wasn't impressed, but it just felt like, hey, let's just like a lot of these remakes, like, hey, let's just. People remember
True.
This title.
Well, they're counting on us Gen Xers
exactly.
to shell
you
out
know,
the money from our childhood.
Him being the director behind it was the only thing that told me this may be something different, that this may be something special. Because he's
absolutely
based on what he did with Arrival, and now to put Arrival and this together, man, is it good to watch adult science fiction.
Yeah.
Like Blade Runner was, that, like things that are
right.
edgy, that have a point, they have something to say, there's actual themes and there's actual messages about the world. It's not just sci-fi, like, hey, we're shooting guns and
right.
you know, which there's certainly a place for that. I love me some Star
Wars.
It's cool
to see in the last couple years like serious drama sci-fi mm-hmm. is making a comeback. I mean, Ex Machina, Alex Garland. And sometimes we do trailer trash when we see trailers, but we rarely
trailer trash. So Justice League,
we saw Justice League pretty much.
Trailer trash.
But speaking of him, the director of Ex Machina, we saw a trailer called Annihilation, starring Natalie Portman. It's a biologist signs up for a dangerous secret expedition where the laws of nature don't apply. That is very
vague. The trailer looked rad.
Trailer looked pretty cool. It's neat to see this stuff coming out. I mean, it's, you know, and it's Blade Runner 2049. I mean, but it's original.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other, you're a big proponent of that. Like, we talk about that a lot as friends and movie friends.
I mean, I almost give original films just get so much more credit because it's inventive, because it's new.
Sure.
You know? And I think they get credit because I'm just
lately,
trying to,
they've
like,
been really good.
Yeah, a lot of them have been. You know, you're trying to, they're so rare that you're, you know, they're like, animals on the verge of extinction. You're like, please, little bird. Like, you know, you're trying to, like, nurse
please
these
be good.
Please be good. You're
well,
trying
to
nurse.
You hear stuff that's, like, you know, written and directed by. And you're like, please be great.
Exactly. But I also think original films have something going for them, which is, like, there's this act of discovery in them. You know,
right.
So when I'm watching, you know, no offense to things like Marvel movies, which are all fine.
Yeah, whatever.
Those are fun. But, like, if I'm watching a Captain America movie, I'm already coming to the movie with baggage. I'm already coming knowing,
right.
Like, hey, it's a guy with a shield. You know so much going in. So it's always, man, it's so rare. But I just love those movies where you go in and you're like, I have no idea.
Right.
I have no idea where this is going to go.
You have no idea what the franchise is.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, how many movies have we seen a year in the last 10 years that are, you know, you've seen it before. It's a part of another entity. You know, it's some, you know, gosh, you could just name dozens and dozens and dozens. It's almost like half the movies that you see now have some universe. They come
absolutely.
From something.
And I just it's unfulfilling to walk out of a movie that didn't actually have an end because it just led into the next thing.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I think there's certainly a place for that. I like what Marvel's doing in the grand scheme of cinema is so unique.
Right.
That's never really been done before. So that's cool in that aspect.
Right, right, right.
But since everybody's trying to mimic that,
right.
It just saturated the market with that. So I just, like, half the time you're like, can't this just be its own thing? Can't this just stand entirely on its own?
Well, and definitely, too, like, and now there's going to be, well, with it being the most successful horror movie of all time,
mm-hmm.
Now we're going to see, I think we're going to see at least, I think we're going to see the Stephen King universe.
It's already happening. J.J. Abrams with the Hulu Castle Rock.
Well, I mean, they're gonna do The Stand. They're gonna do. I mean, they're gonna.
I wouldn't
do
be surprised
all.
If they
they're gonna
go
do
past the book with it, and they do. They go back in time further and show Pennywise in the 1800s, and go. You know, who knows?
Ooh, now you're pushing it.
It
now
might become.
That's
its own.
When it gets bad.
Yes,
but yeah, I mean,
Blade Runner is interesting because it simultaneously is a connection to the original story.
Right.
But at the same time, really does feel like its own thing. Like, I don't know. I've seen the original Blade Runner, just recent as yesterday.
Yeah.
I would be super interested to see how somebody who has never seen the original, how they, like, what their response to this movie would be. Because it felt to me like you didn't need it. It felt like the movie gave you.
I will say, it maybe watch the original. Would you maybe
if you've already seen the certainly suggest if you're going to see this movie
rewatch
the original the original or watch the original for the first time
right
but if it just I would just love to get the opinion of someone
I mean obviously we can't spoil a lot of things that happen and it like you said it does tie into the original one but I think I'm trying to think of some details that it might stand it might stand I don't know.
So if I have to looking at,
and it's not a spoiler that people know that Harrison Ford's in it,
correct?
He's like in the whole trailer.
If I have, certainly a lot of praise for the movie, but if I have to point out the specifics that I loved. Story is wonderful. It's just a solid story. That's why I say it felt original, even though it was a sequel.
It's one of those movies I always say when Sean and I. when a story is so complicated, I always say, like, I can't imagine the index cards laid out on the floor to map out.
Oh, probably all over four walls.
Yeah,
of the
like
place.
A whole
yeah.
office. Because it's just like, wait, so then this.
Yeah.
This.
And
very
what's funny
well
is the writer of the movie, and he's
damn,
a famous.
He's really good at that.
The writer
Him
of the
and
movie.
Nolan.
And the writer of he's a well-known writer, has written a ton of great movies or whatever. He just did Alien Covenant, but his name, he has the same name as my dad. His name is Michael Green.
Yeah,
so it's like I keep seeing this credit all the time. I'm like, hey man,
oh he,
no way, my
he's
dad
a producer on my, this.
He was
Isn't
a producer
he?
And writer.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But story wonderful, very original. It like kept you know like a great detective story, keeps you guessing the entire
yes.
time. It's a great mystery that you're trying to figure out. The acting is, I think, across the board, everyone solid. Like,
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
No wonder that, I mean, I think Ryan Gosling chooses great projects, but it's no wonder people love working with him. He's just so freaking talented in a role that, honest to goodness, a lot of, you know, especially now that these we're getting so many of these movies where we're continuing Harrison Ford's legacy movies.
Yeah, right.
It can be a trap to step into those things
yeah.
and have to, you know, kind of carry on the torch for them. I mean, we saw how bad it went with Crystal Skull,
uh-huh.
you know. But, you know, everyone, even Harrison was great in this. Special effects, man. I mean, it's
dude,
just,
I tell you what, this is one of the first films. Now, you know, we could go back and talk about Arrival, and there's a couple
yeah.
other films we've seen, you know, but something about this where it kind of popped for me where I was like, this shit looks real.
Yeah.
Like, this
and
looks
it
amazing.
Looked like,
it's one of the best future
yes
I've ever seen.
And it
you
looks
know what I mean?
Like an extension of the first one. It looks like it actually aged.
I really,
years.
I want to give props to art direction, design.
Yeah.
Like, they meticulously went through probably every single just piece of art
yeah.
that Blade Runner had. I mean,
it almost feels like.
Do you think they have? I mean, they have access to all that, right?
I certainly believe.
Yeah, I mean,
they're
going through all those old storyboards and old.
I mean, there's
what
a somewhere
it?
On what's that site?
Sketches
Injure or whatever, where they
oh,
do
yeah,
all
yeah.
that. Where you, like somewhere, what there's a link out there. You can Google it, where somebody has just collected. I mean, just dozens upon dozens of photos of all the models from Blade Runner. All the
oh, wow.
I mean, just
yeah.
like the crazy amount of model work
right.
they did for that movie. So there's so many great pictures of that stuff online. The Blade Runner 2049, the technology, the design, everything. It feels like if you go back right now and we look up photos of Times Square in the 60s and 70s,
right.
that's kind of what the jump feels like
yeah.
from the original Blade Runner to this one. It feels
yeah,
like,
right.
okay, you can see how that original look, that original style from 30 years ago,
right.
40 years ago, now looks.
It was also pretty cool
how it's progressed, how it's
yeah.
advanced, but it's kept its.
Well,
there's still Atari signs,
right, right.
you
with
know. There's
technology
still,
though. What's cool with CGI? It's cool that we get to see kind of a pullback of this world
mm-hmm.
because in the original one, whether it be budget or not, I mean, sure you see cars flying around in some city. You know, but really it's like, you know, these are sets in alleys.
Yeah.
But this,
they expanded
you
on it,
get
yeah.
to see what the city of Los Angeles is
mm-hmm.
laid out like.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like.
And beyond. You
yeah.
see San Diego.
You see,
and, yeah.
yeah. It's pretty
and just in Northern California.
Yeah. You
yeah.
see a couple other cities. You
yeah.
do. And it's pretty fascinating that you see how the world is in 2049 laid
yeah.
out more than just a wet alley.
Yeah.
like,
of course.
Or a pyramid that's an office
mm-hmm.
building.
I will say.
Apple's going to have a pyramid office building one day.
Of course. I do. The only two things that the only two I won't even call them strikes or like nags or like not strikes against it. But the only two things I guess kind of bummed me out a little bit in the movie is that this movie and I think this is a very clear conscious decision by the filmmakers. They kind of feel like they certainly feel like they abandoned that film noir style.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, you know, the original Blade Runner was like 1950s version of the future.
Right.
And this feels more like future's version of the future. Like, this felt.
I thought
this
about
felt
that.
A lot of this felt like 2017's version of the future.
I was thinking about that as I was watching it. Like, you know, it lost the noir of it. But you know what?
The story maintained the noir. the story is a noir
story. Sure, yeah, absolutely.
I'm specifically only talking about the design.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But you know what, though? I think that, like, as I'm watching, I'm thinking, you know what, though? This is like them modernizing a 90s cop show.
I guess, or like, this is a
detective movie from the 90s,
and
2000s.
You certainly don't want things to stay this. I mean, in the world of the story, what was it, 32 years?
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't want everything to look the same because things change drastically over 30 years. But, you know, you look back at that original Blade Runner, when he goes to the police station, it's lines with ceiling fans and light coming through window blinds. And, you know, it's still cigarettes and old TVs, monitors, and, you know,
this,
radio.
This definitely gave him more of a Ex Machina feel.
Yeah, it definitely looked like, you know, like the police station. I'm like, that police station set would have fit in a Halo movie.
Right.
That would have fit in a million other sci-fi movies.
Right, right, right.
So I will say some of the design wasn't as unique as the original Blade Runner was.
Sure.
It doesn't hurt.
Yeah,
the
when you live in an apartment that's ancient Egyptian. Like,
yeah,
what
exactly.
The hell?
Yeah, because it was especially that Blade Runner. Yeah, it was all that old Art Deco stuff.
Yeah, right,
which
right.
Was Egyptian influence.
But and that's also like a huge influence in 1920s and 30s, like LA architecture, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and so the fact that the design of the movie, there were sets that in this movie that I was like, this could have been in Ghost in the Shell.
Oh,
this could have been in, you know, so there were certain design elements that weren't quite as unique, but not to the detriment of
now that you're picking my brain a little bit, you're right. There has been a lot of just, you know, white Apple Mac hallways.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that Apple Mac look. Mm-hmm. Where everything's sleek and white, and because it's the future.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. There's a couple of things that,
but like I said, that's nitpicking at this point.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's just comparing something that is so paramount and wonderful about the original,
right,
to its sequel. But
I, speaking of the writing, without spoilers, I appreciated seeing the trailer. I try to stay away from trailers. I'll watch a teaser.
Mm-hmm.
You know the difference between a teaser and a trailer. I'll watch a teaser and then I'm done. Like, I don't want to see, because, you know, especially before it came out, the week of trailers before it came out was the whole movie.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
That's how I specifically am with Star Wars movies. I will watch the trailer one time
and then
I have to walk away because just end up watching that 1,000 times.
I mean, they did a great job in the trailers of just promoting kind of. They're like, hey, everything you like about Blade Runner, we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's meow, meow. They're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the atmosphere, you know. But I never would have guessed where they went with this.
Mm-hmm.
I did not. Did you kind of have an idea?
No, I didn't have an inkling of what.
Because I will say, if you're going to go see it, and you should, don't talk to anybody. Don't get any spoilers, because someone could really screw this movie up for you.
Yeah.
Go
it's
in not knowing.
It's a shame that your podcast doesn't do spoilers, because there is so much wonderful things to talk about, but another day.
That's I know. It's
okay,
the nature
so
of
lastly,
this.
The only, and this is the tiniest nitpick of all time, but Harrison Ford's costumes. He just looks like he's Harrison Ford. Like,
An Uber picked him up from Whole Foods in Santa Monica.
Yes, and he went on set, he shot his stuff, and then they dropped him off at home. He never once looks like Deckard to me. He just looks like Harrison Ford the whole
movie.
Not knocking his acting. His acting is wonderful in it. His performance is great.
Yeah, really
But he
good.
never looks like the evolution of an old noir detective. He looks like he was just putting a deck in the backyard, or he's like power washing the deck.
Really? But, you know, I will say, though, because – you know, you see him show up in things and you kind of hear, well, when he does interviews and you hear about, he's not really thrilled to do movies anymore.
I think more so now than he used to be.
Yeah, there was a while where he, like, 2000s, he just gave up.
Yeah.
He didn't seem like for 10 years almost.
You could definitely question a lot of the movie choices in the 2000s, but I mean, he was great in Force Awakens. He was great in this.
There's not a spoiler, but he gets wet a lot in this. and I thought, oh, he must have really liked the script. He probably wrote this, I ain't doing this damn shit.
Yeah.
Like, he don't want to. But I'm like, oh, he probably got paid a lot. And he really
I watched
liked
an
this.
Interview with him this morning where they were like, what were you thinking, you know, when they first sent you the script for, you know, Blade Runner, a Blade Runner sequel? You know,
I ain't getting that wet.
What was your first thought reading the script? He was like, how much? His first question.
He literally
how
said,
how much?
He
yeah,
didn't give a
I know.
Shit.
No, I think, like, listen, at this point, like, you got to be thrilled to death that, like, okay, what's he? He's in his 70s.
Right.
The fact that he's still getting co-leading roles, you know,
yeah.
in good movies, that's
right.
a rare thing, you know?
Yeah.
We were talking, was this, I can't remember if this was on or off the podcast, but we were talking earlier about De Niro and the, like, just insane, you know, 100 movies a year he's in all over the map, you know?
Right.
So the fact that Harrison, you know, is still getting offered really good roles happens to be roles that he started 30, 40 years
ago.
Yeah,
I mean, he's really only doing, like, reboots.
Yeah.
He's
kind of closing out his sagas. We got Indiana Jones next on the docket.
Oh, good. You did mention, I wanted to mention Jared Leto was pretty terrifying. I think he matched up with Roy in a different terrifying way. Because you see in the trailer, if you watch the trailer, I mean,
yeah, there's such drastically different characters,
right.
Yeah.
But what I mean is still on that level of
he makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I think I got to give Roy.
Well,
the
Roy
edge
was
on
like
it.
A
yeah.
rabid Wolverine.
Yeah,
he was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to mention Sylvia Hoax. She played kind of the villain that was like the right hand of
yeah,
Jared Leto.
Yeah, she's like the henchman kind
she
of
She was
whatever.
Like a damn T-1000.
Yeah.
She is phenomenal. She's
yeah.
going to be
the
in a
violence
lot of stuff.
Is startling. There's not a crazy
yeah.
amount of it. It's not the amount of it, but when there is violence,
I mean,
it makes you
The
flinch.
Original Blade Runner, when he killed that first replicant.
Yeah, oh, there's, yeah, I'm not,
The dancer. The
going through the glass
dancer.
And even Pris,
dude.
You know, she's like,
oh my,
you know,
I know,
yeah, convulsing
yeah.
on the ground, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, there was certainly the first one is certainly not, yeah, has some violence of its own, but yeah, there was a couple moments where I had to shield avert my eyes.
I saw you, but no, she's phenomenal. I like I can't wait to see her more of her.
Mm-hmm.
She was kind of scary.
Yeah,
she
absolutely.
She was a futuristic bad bitch. That's
yeah.
what you would call her.
Blade Runner is just a world. It's fun to visit in movies, and you just
yeah.
hope to God it never really looks like that.
Right? Yeah.
Like just their apartments. You know, one of the things that I that one of the first scenes is once again not a spoiler, but Ryan Gosling when he first goes to his apartment and how crowded the hallway is leading to his apartment. Just you can just tell that this city is stuffed with human beings.
Oh my gosh, I know.
And so
well,
I was just claustrophobic. Him having to push through a hallway full of people into this tiny,
yeah.
tiny apartment. Like
there, it reminded me too, like one of, like I said, one of those shots in the new one of Los Angeles. You see these city blocks
mm-hmm.
that just look like. It looks like a motherboard.
Yes.
It's just, I mean.
That's a really great way to put it. Yeah, the city
just,
looks like
a
motherboard.
There's no
yeah.
parks.
Yeah.
There's no concrete.
Yeah.
It is just thin streets and just stacks and stacks
mm-hmm.
of.
And you don't realize that.
Buildings.
You think you're like, you almost think you're looking at the ground. But I'm like, those buildings themselves are skyscrapers. But they are so
yeah.
clumped together that it makes it look like ground.
It looks like
yeah.
someone's just like stacking like,
yeah, so, like people are
cases
living in,
of soda.
Yeah,
like
people
just,
are living in canyons essentially.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
this,
yeah, yeah.
The streets are canyons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like tech.
It's
know.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in that, this is a little before we get out of here and we rate it. Sean and I have been doing a little via satellite section where we bring in special guests. And tonight, via satellite, we have a special guest. Let's see if we can connect it. This is a whole bit we do. It's not even real. It's,
okay.
like, it's not even a real
do
bit.
Do you do a modem sounds now? Is that what's about to happen?
That's what the modem sound is.
Okay.
One of our friends was a guest on the podcast before. It's our friend Alan Schultz. Alan Schultz is going to come via satellite. And I called Alan in because I want him to, without spoiling the movie or the book, tell us how excited you are to be able to see if Alan can hear me right now. This is This is a bit that doesn't even hold on. I'll just go with this bit. If you're excited about this movie and you've also read the book Ready Player One, you'll be very excited because there's a lot of Blade Runner in the book Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, mm-hmm. which I just finished on the recommendation of our Via Satellite guest, Alan Schultz.
I recommend the book to you?
Wait a second. Alan Schultz via satellite. I know. Now Chris is cut off.
And Chris did recommend this book to me. And I recommended it to you, and you shot it down at first. But then,
okay, first of all, we're breaking the fourth wall here. Okay, first of all, I just want to say about Ready Player One is I really only read history, and I'm a dork. I read, like, history and biographies, and I've been going back and forth in between history and biography, and then the third one will be a Stephen King novel, because why not? So I'm not crazy about sci-fi books. I've tried them.
No, I fully understand, but this is definitely one book that totally tugged at my heartstrings.
It was
fantastic. It was wonderful.
Are you looking forward to the movie?
Oh yes. Back to the Future references.
I can't believe Spielberg's directing it. Ernest Cline has to be bonkers.
It's
to him.
It's insane.
Like the fact that that's one of the main influences of the book. You're kind of writing this thing as an homage to him, and then that person directs the movie.
And
it's kind of bonkers.
They tried to kind of deceive you too, I think, because they had talked about not getting the right licenses to have certain things in the movie, and I think they're going to have everything, but I'm not sure.
I think they're going to have everything Spielberg wants.
Yeah.
I think he's going to choose what he wants. He's already said that he's struck every reference of anything he directed.
Sure.
He's left anything he produced, but he's like, there's not going to be E.T., there's not going to be anything Indiana Jones, anything he directed, he's yanking, but anything he produced is fair game.
But if people are excited to see Blade Runner because of Ready Player One, they're not going to be disappointed. It's exciting to look back at that. And also to see Ready Player One, are they going to use movie clips because in the book you go back to like movies and music.
That's one of the ones I'm most interested in seeing what they do in Ready Player One. Cause in the book they go to a specific movie that is 80s kids know it, but it's not as famous as, so I wouldn't be surprised if, it becomes like Goonies or something where it really, especially one
and
that.
There are Goonies references as
correct,
well.
Correct, yeah. But it'll be interesting to see if Goonies is something they end up reliving. Mm-hmm. Because there's your excuse for getting your Goonies sequel, because you just get a little taste without having
chills.
To do a full movie.
Alan's getting chills. Goonies sequel, Sean Collier doesn't give a shit because he doesn't like Goonies.
Did I know.
You know that? Sean Collier didn't like Goonies.
I don't think my wife saw Goonies until she was also an adult and also did not like it. Yeah, I think it's one of those things like you got to see it as a kid. I get it. It's like it's tainted with nostalgia.
Absolutely.
Alan Schultz, thank you for joining us via satellite.
He's really not even via satellite. He's like next to me on the couch. It's whatever.
Thank you for having me here.
You're the best, sir.
Thank you.
Wait. Let me call up Alan Schultz via satellite one more time because we're going to start rating. Alan, can you hear me? Can you come back online? How many out of 10 would you give Blade Runner 2049?
I would give what?
First of all, I didn't even count them. Second of all, you sound like if your computer talked in Chewbacca.
Yeah, he just contacted the Close Encounters aliens.
I was trying to get to 10 very quickly.
Okay, so it's 10. 10 out of 10 for Alan Schultz. Thank you for joining us via satellite. Not really, though. It's just a bit.
Yeah, he's just on a couch.
Out of 10, I gave Arrival a 10. I'm gonna say, is this better than Arrival? I'm gonna go a 9.5. I'm not gonna give it a 10 because Arrival I thought was was could be Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this could be Best Picture, but I enjoyed it so much. And those points count. Mm-hmm. You know, we always say it's film critic slash fan. So I give it a 9.5.
That's good. I'm probably going to go with a 9. We just, like, we went down in half.
That's okay.
10 is reserved for, like, you know, E.T. Like, you know.
Okay.
Well, hey, listen. With time, this could become a 10. If it works hard enough, this could become a 10.
Oh, it's the little movie that could.
Yeah, but, you know, you always got to leave that one, you know, that one little thing. But, yeah, I mean, it was just great. It was wonderful. I'm so happy it exists. I'm so happy it was made. I'm so happy that, what, like 17 studios worked on this thing. So I'm so happy that they were willing to make a movie that wasn't just this cookie cutter thing that, you know, was actually challenging and had actual real characters, real people being affected.
Yeah.
Real in quotation marks.
Right, right.
You know, most of them are.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
But which ones are?
Void Comp. There's a turtle turned over in the desert. It's baking in the sun. A boy shows you his killing jar with the butterflies.
Oh, my God.
Alan's a replicant.
So I just want to give Chris a quick shout out. I mean, we've been best friends for a long time, but definitely go check out his sci-fi short film, Echo Torch, on mm-hmm. echotorch.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, I mean, if Pittsburgh friends, if you're a Pittsburgh Dad fan, he directs and writes Pittsburgh Dad with Kurt Wooten. But you can go check out an inspired short film by Pittsburgh Dad called Streetlight Stories
mm-hmm.
that just so happens to my son, Luke the Nuke, is in that one.
Yep.
So you can go check that out, too. And you can check that out on the Pittsburgh Dad YouTube, right?
Correct.
Or PittsburghDad.com. Yeah.
You Google Streetlight Stories.
Yeah, and check you will that find out. It. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Nope.
Anything else coming up?
That's it.
Are you doing a sequel?
A sequel to
Time Bandits?
Time Bandits, yep. No, I'm directing a standalone Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. It's just going to be me and my friends. Or
I saw Chris posted on, what, like Instagram or something?
Something like that.
About this, like it was like, what was it, like 40-year-old Obi-Wan?
Yeah, it looked like, 40, 50-year-old
like
Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan tales?
Yeah, because it's what you would call it. Is it Sideshow Collectibles?
Yeah,
someone's
yeah.
making the statue of like a younger, like the an Obi-Wan that looks like a cross between Ewan McGregor and Alec Guinness.
I mean, pretty much, I mean, that would be Indiana Jones. It should be like Indiana Jones meets like,
yeah, there's
Luke
just
Skywalker meets
like it kind of feels meets, like I don't know why
Johnny
it is
Quest.
That the whole world feels like that. So many people feel like they're honed in on this movie that hasn't been announced yet, but it feels like there's this black
Buckaroo
hole.
Banzai.
Yeah, there's this black hole kind of pulling everyone towards like certain Star Wars stories to be made, and a standalone Obi-Wan Kenobi seems to be that black hole of like. Drawing everyone towards
I've
it.
I've heard
like
everything
a
from
Western.
A Boba Fett movie.
Yeah, Boba
to,
Fett.
Well, they're doing Young Han Solo.
Yeah.
But a Boba Fett movie, you know.
Which Boba Fett movie you could pass. Like, I don't really need to know much about Boba Fett. But Obi-Wan Kenobi on Tatooine sounds about like the coolest
or
thing ever.
Or how he got
essentially
to Tatooine.
an outcast. Well, we saw that in Revenge of the Sith.
I forgot about that
Yeah.
one.
But basically, an outcast samurai in a desert having to defend a child that he can't share his identity with is just about the
you
coolest thing
that
in the world.
Gave me chills.
Yeah, I mean, that's just
Can you
so
email
rad.
That? Can you email that to
okay,
Lucasfilm?
Done.
That pitch was really good, Chris. No,
that's it. You I'm just going to walk into Lucasfilm and be like,
Chris, you should make movies for a living.
Yeah.
No. Alan, get in on this. No. Oh, that was a good
but
one.
But you need that blimp that's always like just singing vaguely Asian chanting.
Pan Am. Pan
yeah.
Am.
Yeah.
Pan Am. Atari. Do you want a friend? Do you need a friend? I'll be whatever you want me to be.